Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 241 for October 7th, 2019. We are recording this at 1 p.m. Eastern time. Today, we will be discussing the 315th weekly report. So if you haven't had a chance to take a look at this yet, just go to timingresearch.com/reports, and you can access either the web or PDF version there. Today, I have arranged for Mark Sachs, Neil Batho, and Jim Kenny to join us. And I'm going to go ahead and turn over Jim. He's going to be
okay. Thank you, David, and welcome everybody. Today we have Mark Sachs of RightLineTrading.com and Neil Batho's of TraderReview.net. And we had a very wild week last week where we went way down into the low 2800 area, closed way back up at 2950. And today it's pretty much a do nothing day as we're right at the same number pretty much that we were at on Friday. First off, let's get to know, for the people who are newcomers to the show, get to know the speakers here today. So Mark Sachs has a lot of very interesting information, and he is going to give you a little background on himself as well as what Right Line Trading's up to right now. So Mark, what do you got?
Hi everyone. This is Mark from Right Line. I'm a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania, and basically my area of expertise is in mathematical model. That's one of the things I focused on in my undergraduate work. And what we do is we base our software on the consideration that every market is a closed system, and we look for those specific forces that are responsible for the movement of price off the right edge in that closed system.
And Right Line, as we get into the broadcast and later in the broadcast, you'll explain a little bit more about how you approach the markets. I have a question detailing that. So again, so the listener and can understand more about exactly how you're approaching the market, because everyone's got their own angle on how they do that.
Sure.
Neil, you've obviously been on the show many times, and it's good to have you back. And for those who are new to the broadcast, could you do a little background on yourself and explain a little bit about TraderReview.net?
Sure, Jim. Thanks for having me on the show again. Yeah, back in 98, 99, I used to be a broker at a big firm, and I realized it's really just more of a sales job than a stock picking job or analysis job. And I really wasn't, you know, a salesman type of guy, you know, and I noticed that brokers will never get you out at the top, and they'll never get you out at the bottom. So I think they'll never get you out at the bottom is really the one thing a broker's going to really help you with. You know, and let's say the big crash in 2009, and you know, they're the ones that are going to say, just keep holding and it'll work out. But on the other hand, they're not going to save you from crash. So I did some consulting for a while in business, and then I started my newsletter, and I used the same analysis, same systems that the major firms use, which is a huge database on point and figure charting. And so that's my main analysis. And then I also confirm it with the Ichimoku cloud, which is a lot easier to see and understand, has people trends on it. So I'll just do trend trading for the most part, sometimes a little bit of a rebound, like we did on the S&P, I think it was about a week or two ago. And I'll just send out a tight portfolio of stock and option picks to my clients.
You also use the candlesticks as well, right, Neil?
Yeah, the candlestick go on top of the Ichimoku cloud, which is like a trend line, but it's
right.
A trend line, and it'll either bounce off the top of the cloud or bounce off the bottom or sort of go into the middle. So it's a little bit nicer than just a fine line that can get easily broken.
And you have access right now to a lot of the technicals on the different markets, right?
Yeah, I'll be looking it up on the show.
Great, that'll be perfect, because like I said, there's a lot of things going on in the market. Mark is going to be looking at things on a very short-term basis, and then maybe you could pull the lens back a little bit and talk a little bit about a little bit more about the intermediate and longer term trades trends on some of these things, because you know, we are getting into a situation with October that the winds of change will probably be blowing, and whatever direction it goes might be significant. All right, let's start out with the first question, which always is, what do you guys think the market will do between now, Monday's opening, and that was around 29.44, and Friday's close? We'll start out with Mark.
Based on the technicals, I think that they're somewhat bearish in terms of order flow. Our analysis is all based is done on a multi-time frame basis. I mean, I don't believe that anything that that assesses price off your trading chart has any forward-looking ability. So we look for a multi-time frame alignment and trend of the instrument you're trading. We look at a multi-time frame assessment of momentum, and order flow. And the big thing is we look at money flow. And right now, all of those things are neutral. But the thing that I also watch is commitment of traders. And on Friday, there was a really large purchases of call options on the SPY. So there's a lot of big money that's they were monthly options, and I don't remember the strike price, but they were looking for about a 1.5% move up to hit their strike price and make money. So taking that all into account, with our platform reading neutral and the commitment of big traders going strongly positive. I mean, there was a single options trade for 20,000 contracts, and that was a lot of money. And there were multiple SPY call option trades crossing. I would be bullish, maybe about 55 to 60%.
Yeah, I'll get into the percentage in a minute, but I did want to ask you a couple of questions. One is, what time frames do you find most interesting to you? You say multi time frames. Could you be more specific on what time frames?
Sure. Well, it really depends. It really depends. I mean, I'll tell you. I mean, I trade live every morning, and this morning it was a tough morning, and I wound up making a net of zero. My maximum pull up was 200, draw down 500, and we closed it at zero. The time frames that I trade Unarenco candles, so maybe they're equivalent to about a 1 or 2 minute. And basically, the higher time frames are simply multiples of your trading chart. If you want to trade a 5 minute, the indicators will analyze data from 3 times 5 is 15, and then 3 times 15, the 15 and the 45. So if you want to swing trade, say off of a 2 hour candle, they'll look at the 6 and the 6 hour and the 18 hour. So it really depends. The 2 hour time frame, just three multiples of your trading chart.
I got you.
Twice.
Yeah. So whatever your initial chart is, 3 times will give you another time zone, and then another 3 will give you another vantage point, and then you try to get some kind of conclusion out of the 3.
Right. And I just want to add one quick thing, Jim. I think the real importance of the mathematics of day trading is that we look for specificity and not sensitivity. I mean, there are a lot of trades that win where we are just not set up to take. But when we get set up for a trade, the likelihood of getting a winner is extremely high. And our goal is not to get all winners. Our goal is to avoid and sidestep all losers, or as many as we can. If we can do that, then we can day trade extremely profitably.
One last question on the commitment of traders. Obviously, those numbers you said were kind of impressive. Two questions. One is, what was the duration, do you think, of the option? And two, do you dismiss the concept that it might be hedging a short position or replacing long stocks?
No. Here's what I think. And this is, first of all, they were all placed at the bid. And when options traders buy at the bid, it's a bullish commitment. When they buy at the ask, it's more of a bearish commitment. The other thing is, these were large enough options trades, mm-hmm, that they were actually bigger than a couple of them were bigger than the total open interest. So when they're larger than open interest, they're unlikely to be hedged positions, although it's always possible. Now, the thing that I believe is that, the SPY isn't cheap. And, a person who bought 20,000 contracts is leveraging an enormous number of shares and money. And I just think this was big money who wants to place a really strong bullish bet on the SPY, but just doesn't want to make that financial commitment.
Yeah, because if he's replacing underlying stock, he obviously is taking a heck of a lot of money off the table and then just putting on a relatively small amount to hedge just in case he's wrong.
Right, right. I think these are traders that they, based on those parameters, the options trades were placed at the bid, and also the fact that they were either equal to or higher than the total open interest on the strike,
yeah,
that these were likely just big traders placing trades.
And how far out did they go?
I'm sorry?
How far out?
They were all 1 month contracts.
1 month.
Yeah,
okay.
They were not weekly. 2 weeks.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's, and so they're thinking that by month's end, they'll get some action into the beginning of November.
Listen, they're looking for 1.5. That's how far.
Yeah, I mean, that's not very, that's not very much. You can get that very quickly.
What was the expiry date of the options? I forget.
The expiration date was, you know, the expiration of the October monthly.
End of month.
Yeah. The end of month.
Soon. They want it soon, huh?
Yeah. Well, listen, it's not a bad bet. We're right here at 29.52. If it is going to break out and get everybody going again, you know, obviously they'll probably make a big hit on that.
And what was the strike at the money, pretty much?
You know, he said about 1%. He said about 1%, 1.5% above the market. So obviously that's the one you would buy if you thought there was going to be a breakout, because you don't want to pay the premiums for the lower ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were looking for about a 1.5% move up on the SPY.
That's options. Common sense 101 is that if you're looking for a good size move, you buy a little bit out of the money because obviously you get more leverage.
Yeah, I do that also.
All right. Well, that's great. And I think we got a pretty good idea of what you're thinking for the next week here, a little bit on the upside. And then, Neil, what are you calling here from 29.44 today's open to Friday?
Well, how about this? If the S&P 500 breaks 29.60, I would say up. Otherwise, I would say down. And I sort of have this expression, works for a lot of things. If you don't know what to do, just do nothing. Mm-hmm. And we're doing a fair amount of nothing this week. One of the indicators I use from Point and Figure, if anyone has a chance, you can look it up right now. Just go to stockcharts.com, click a little drop down for Point and Figure, and then type in BPSPX. That will give you the bullish percent for the S&P 500. And I had it up just a moment ago. And what it'll do is it'll tell you what percent of stocks in the S&P 500 are on near-term buy signals. So it's a scale from 0 to 100. And it's right now at 53.60. So just a little bit more than half the stocks in the S&P 500 are any decent on a short-term basis. And this little rally of the last couple of days hasn't changed that at all. It's actually gotten worse. So what I look at is, you know, there's about 47% of stocks that aren't so good, 53 that are okay. But I think on those charts in these individual stocks, you're getting a rally to resistance on a lot of them. So I don't like it. I kind of want to say up, because when the market goes down, has a really bad week, and you have an up day on Friday, you'll all get a gap up on Monday. And that's what I think these option traders are looking for. So I'm going to go with a breakout up, down. Otherwise, I know we have to say up or down, but...
Well, you are right in the middle. You know, it's okay to say if we break a certain level, you certainly would throw your hat in the ring. And if we break down under a certain level, you want your hat back.
It's kind of like if anyone's ever been to Vegas. I mean, I've only made a couple bets in my entire life. But it's like you go to the roulette table and you say, oh, wow, it hit black 5 times in a row. Does that mean I should bet red now? Is it in my favor? I'm not sure.
Yeah. No, this level here, 29.50, is a rough racket to make major decisions at. With regards to what is the cloud and the candle saying about the market right now? Was it giving you a little bit of a vibe of?
The cloud is not good for sideways markets. It's only good for trending markets.
I got you. And we're chopping.
So right now it's just sideways. I mean, you know, I've seen a lot of these things before, and here's what's going to happen. You're going to be at work and you're going to be having a coffee, and there's going to be someone hanging around the water cooler or the coffee machine saying, you know what, this market's really, really a bit volatile. I think I'm going to buy some dividend yielding stocks. And when you start hearing that, you know the market's going to go down, because what happens when the economy goes down is stocks that pay dividends are going to cut their dividends, and then you're really in trouble, because then the stock's going to fall off because it cut the dividend, you know. So you're going to get this a lot. But one of the things I noticed in charting, and I didn't notice this at the beginning, I came across it, is that no matter what the chart does, as long as it has higher bottoms, you're pretty much okay. So if I look at the chart of the S&P 500, I mean, we got a bottom at 2725, 2780, 2800, 2850. And as long as that keeps happening, you're okay.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say that the chart is bearish at all, but the underlying technicals are getting more bearish. And that is sort of a preemptive indicator to be careful. And when the S&P, when the bullish percent is in O's and you're trying to buy, it can only be short term until it moves, until those underlying indicators get better. So.
All right. Well, let's go over the confidence number. Mark, you were sharing the confidence number a little early there. Why don't you share it with us now?
Well, I'm going to go as high as 60%. And I'll tell you why. One of the indicators that we use is a multi-time frame analysis of volatility. It's a combination. I mean, it's one of the cleverest indicators I created. And it's the only indicator that I made in 2011 that we still use. We've dumped everything else and revised our platform. But that the volatility indicator on a multi-time frame basis has been yellow. And what I found is that the longer the volatility in the markets, and that I know we've had some short-term upswings and downswings, but I think my colleague is David or Neil.
No, Neil Bethos, yeah.
Right. Well, Neil said that basically he's looking at a sideways market, and I totally agree with him. I mean, our volatility indicator is really reading yellow, and I think that the longer it stays yellow, that's when you anticipate a really strong move one way or the other.
Right.
You know, the markets are always in expansion and contraction, with expansion and contraction in terms of volatility. So I think if we do get a move up this week, it should be a fairly, it should be a fairly good one.
I think so too, yeah.
If that volatility picks up and our volatility analysis goes green, we're going to get a little jolt.
Yeah.
And if it turns red, I'm going to be wrong, but we're going to get a jolt to the downside. But based on what I've said previously, I believe that jolt is going to come to the upside.
Yeah. And of course, you got the China talks. And of course, I don't think anybody wants to be short going into the China talks, because if he decides to take a watered down deal or a temporary deal, that could be the legs to get everybody who is either short or out to get back in.
But Jim, can I just say one thing?
Yeah.
At this point, a lot of the China stuff's already factored in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's starting to become old news.
Yeah.
You know, everyone knows talks are on and off. You know, yeah. Trump's playing this game and that game.
Yeah.
Unless something really bad or really good comes out, I don't know if it's going to have that much of an effect as it did like previously.
Yeah, it probably won't have as much of an effect as all these earnings that are coming out and all the guidance that they're going to have. And that's going to be coming out pretty much constantly in the next month. So obviously, that's the big news.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah. We really got to look at the guidance, because even if they record earnings, if there's any type of a hint and slowdown in the guidance, that's what
he's got to figure out if FedEx was an anomaly or if that was really a precursor. We'll probably find that out pretty soon here. All right. Well, let's go. Neil, did you want to throw a percentage in there? Well, obviously, your thing is if it breaks out up or down, your percentage of confidence at that point would be?
Oh, yeah, that would be, you know, 65%.
Yeah, if we got some kind of a breakout of those ranges, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, this is really a needle in a haystack market, and you know, you're not going to get rich this week. You're not going to miss out on an opportunity to get rich this week if you decide to not do a lot of trading, that's for sure. So
yeah, because it's tug of war between what people are thinking, and of course, they are waiting for these economic reports from the companies to start coming out, so they get an idea of what the heck's really behind the curtain.
Does anyone know when the next big report is coming out, an earnings report or economic?
Well, I think the banks are ones that come out first, aren't they, generally?
Is that this week?
I believe it's this week or next. I don't know the exact dates, but I know that they're coming. They tend to be the earlier announcers, you know. But anyway, let's go over and talk about what, like Mark, what technical or fundamental things are you looking at right now that you are finding very much important as far as the S&P is concerned right now?
Well, the things that you know, the technicals that I look at S&P wise are the same for every market. Multi-time frame analysis, I think the single most important independent variable that you can get, and in fact, if you don't have this, it renders everything else significantly less potent, and that is a multi-time frame alignment and trend of the instrument you're trading. So if you're trading the SPY or, you know, anything, and you get a multi-time frame alignment up, that's, I think, the low-hanging fruit. That's where we get our best trades on a short-term basis. Multi-time frame alignment to the downside, you're great. The other things that hone in your entry is the volatility indicator. Short-term basis, we like it to be, you know, red down, green up. And then I think order flow, the way we assess it on a multi-time frame is important. And then we use a Laguerre oscillator. We've modified it, changed all its inputs. It doesn't look for divergence. What we look for, essentially, to boil it all down, Jim, into one little nut, is we look for proxies of big money coming into the market. Something that creates significant buying pressure to push the gear into the overbought and stick it there.
Now, you were talking about commitment of traders, which obviously you saw some aberrant activity in.
Yes.
Do you follow like those Nigerian guys, unusual option activity?
Listen, I have Benzinga and I have Options Monster.
Right.
And at the end, And what I do is I have it filtered so that if there's a big trade, it emails me. So at the end of the day, I just go through all my emails and it takes me, you know, maybe 20 minutes. And it shows me all the big options trades that are crossed. You know, Benzinga will publish all the Najarian Brothers trades. And there's a couple of other people too. It gives you the bulls and the bears of the week off of Kramer's stock. But really what the Najarian Brothers do are the same thing that I do. I mean, yeah. They look
well, on a percentage basis, how helpful is the inordinate option activity as far as catching a move? Is it effective 10% of the time, 100% of the time, 70% of the time? I mean, a ballpark figure, how effective is it overall?
Okay. I mean, that's a great question. And I can tell you this, a lot of big money is willing to take a lot more risk than I'm willing to take. Like sometimes there'll be huge options positions crossing on a weekly contract that's got 3 days to expire. I mean, these are people that got money to burn. You know, the Najarian Brothers are in. You know, there's a few other people that are in. But I'm not going to take that trade. It's too risky for me. Even though it's maybe 20 cents a contract, I'm not going to go for that. So, you know, I like the 1 month to 6 weeks to 2 month calls. Like right now I have Toll Brothers.
So what you're saying is sometimes you'll see a big activity, but it's only a 4 day option. And that wouldn't be as interesting to you as if it was a 30 day, 60 day type commitment.
Yeah. I mean, listen, if I was worth, $100 million and and I was risking $50,000 on a 20 cent option that was going to expire in 72 hours and I didn't make it, you know, I wouldn't go, I wouldn't be going to Wendy's to eat for the next, for the next 300 years.
Right.
You know, my traders, and I take all the trades I recommend and all the people who follow me, you know, don't have money to burn. Right. And I don't recommend those kind of risky trades.
Right.
You know, the latest one that I took off of big money was Toll Brothers. You know, in this rocky market, it's hanging in. And here's just one other thing. I don't want to take up too much time.
Yeah.
Oftentimes it will just be a call. But what I'll do is I'll create a spread out of it. So I even decrease the risk on the position even less.
Right.
Because I simply don't like to take a lot of risk on any individual options position. But yeah. I'll tell you, 75 to 80% of the time, if you follow unusual options, but the thing is, it's really important again to look at two things: whether the trade is at the bid, whether the purchase is at the bid or the ask, and the size of the position relative to open interest. Because, mm-hmm. like you said, it could simply be somebody creating a hedge against stock they own.
What about the sector you're looking at? Like obviously, the home builders have been doing well, and so you see a sector that's obviously getting a bid, and you know that 2/3 of 20-year-olds are living with their parents, so you know that they got to move out at some point. Unemployment's at 3.5%. Why not now? And so, you know, are there many factors like that going in, or is it just really a limited amount of numerical stuff? Because I know you're a numerical guy.
Well, you know, rarely do you see, I call them cluster options positions, because it's not just one person, or it's one person buying multiple large positions. And that's what I watch for. Rarely do you see somebody make a big money commitment in a sector that's simply out of favor. They're gonna point you to what they think are gonna be the hot sectors coming up. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you that the Toll Brothers positions were placed right before all of that data came out on, you know, the strong new home sales, things right. like I think a lot of these traders have information that we just don't have access to.
Or they have it earlier than we do. Yeah.
Before the official official announcements made.
Yeah. You know? All right. Well, let's switch over to Neil. And Neil, same question. You know, what fundamental and technical indicators are you kind of looking at here? And Mark, you know, is generally obviously looking at a day trade or a relatively short trade generally. What is your time horizon generally? So what are you looking at and what kind of time horizons?
Well, I'll always look at the daily chart and make most of my decision based on that. But then to fine tune the entry point, I'll go down to the hourly chart for swing trading. And if it's during the day, you can just use five. I like point and figure is really unique as well because there is no time frame. It will only change the chart if there's a type of decent move on the chart, depending on the scale that you're using, whether it's a dollar or not. But let's say a typical large cap stock, if it only moves a dollar or two a day, you could often not even get a move on the chart. And that way the trend lines will stay intact. So it's a really fantastic analysis that I use. But yeah, I'll swing trading. I'll just look at the daily and the hourly. Weekly, I don't really like the weekly at all. It tends to be a bit of a confusing chart, but I'll look at it occasionally for the market. And I'll even look at the monthly chart. The monthly chart is a really fun chart to look at, but just to get a big overall picture of it. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, pretty much. And with regards to the technicals, you're looking at the cloud, you're looking at the candles, and you're looking at the point and figure. Anything else like moving averages come into play?
Not so much. I guess if the MACD turns down, you have to notice it, you know. What I'll also do is I'll look at some big things and how they're all correlating together. So, I mean, every day I'll look at SE, I'll look at oil, gold, the dollar index, I'll look at bonds, which are just fantastic to trade. I mean, we were up 60% in 2 days last week just on some long-term bond calls. I just love trading bonds for some reason, even though I used to think they're the most boring thing in the world. Why would you buy these things? But
not this year.
I know. I think 30% from the bottom, something like that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you're trading futures, you can leverage the long-term bond 40 times. Mm. So, I mean, you know, you got to start trading bonds. Everyone needs to start trading bonds.
One thing that I look at sometimes is the 10-year track record of a ETF, and then a 5-year and a 3-year and a 1-year. And when I see long-term treasuries up 30% on a ETF this year, and it averages 6%, you know, it kind of gives me an idea that something inordinate is happening. And my belief is inordinate doesn't last. You know?
Yeah, we're actually out of those calls today, by the way.
Yeah. In other words, you know, I was looking at some of the small caps when we were up at 1700 on the Russell, and some of the ETFs were up like 30% and so, and their 10-year average was more like 7. And so sometimes looking at the different perspectives of the rate of returns of an ETF can kind of give you an idea if something might be a little undervalued, might be way overvalued, might be something to consider, that kind of thing. I don't think it's a bad thing to get an idea on that, because like they say, the trees don't grow to the sky. So if you have an inordinate jump in something, you know, it's hard to sustain inordinate.
Yeah. And then, I mean, the most inexperienced investors and traders are the ones that are going to get in at the end. Mm. They're going to say, hey, wow. I mean, last couple weeks ago, they would think, hey, is our bond place to be now? And unfortunately, they're often always wrong.
I would give a comparison sometimes of people who want to invest in like the movie Titanic, you know, after it's been out for 2 months. It's going to be a little more expensive to invest at that point than when he was in the room drawing up the drawings. You know what I mean?
I'm wondering if there's a chart you can get for odd lots, because this was even in the Series 7 exam I did as a broker, where it would say odd lots are sort of like someone buying 30
less than 100 shares,
lots, you know, something weird like that. And then they would track how many odd lot purchases there were. And when the odd lot purchases really spiked, that would really be a peak in the market. So even the Series 7 had a few technical things in there. But the only technical pattern, this is kind of off topic, is the head and shoulders pattern. The only one technical pattern in the entire license you need to be a broker is the head and shoulders pattern. So
that's the one they buy into. That's the one they buy into. Yeah, the other stuff, the GAN lines and the Fibonacci numbers might be a little too much for the average Joe who's trying to get a Series 7, right?
I would love to trade odd lots. I'm going to try to look that up and see if I can find that.
All right, now we've got a good question, and then I want to save some time to go around the horn, meaning go over some of the different sectors of the markets out there and get your guys' input on what you're kind of seeing or what your opinion might be if you have an opinion on it. So basically, the last question here before we get into something like that would be for Mark and both and Neil, what types of trading do you focus on, and what led you to that decision? Which you know, I think is a pretty good idea, because you know, you guys are in this business and you are coming up with certain schemes and stuff, and you have a certain thing that you're kind of focused on, and you came came to that decision with experience. So, Mark, what type of trading do you kind of focus on? I know, I think it's short term, but you'll have a much better explanation than me. And then how'd you come to that decision?
Well, you know, every morning at 9:30, I'm in my live trading room. We have 175 traders, and we take very short term trades. I mean, some of them, you know, on crude and gold, some of them last 3 seconds. You know, they'll move 25 ticks in a blink of an eye. Others will last maybe, you know, a couple of minutes. But, you know, I'm trading a pretty fast chart. I use a Unirenko candle, which has a lot of same properties. The only variable that's responsible for the creation of a new candle is simply how far the market moves. Now, I have some traders that trade a 30 Unirenko. Others trade a 60 Unirenko because they're interested in day trade or swing trading. But I traded.
In other words, when you expand that, in other words, if you got a signal to buy some crude and say it was $53 a barrel, and and you're using the shorter one, mm-hmm. does that shorter one also give you a get out point that's pretty close to 53, but also a get out point that's pretty close above 53 if it goes your way?
Okay, what we do is we base that's called your automated trade management strategy.
Right.
What we do is we look at the we go back and analyze the volatility of the instrument going back 6 months, because and actually what we look at is the average true range. So if you know the average true range of the instrument, then you can pre-format your targets. Like, you know, everybody wants a 2-to-1 or a 3-to-1 risk to reward, and you cannot get that on a leveraged instrument. It's impossible. So to give you an example, on crude, I trade two contracts, very small number of contracts, because most of the traders in the room don't have a lot of money. So we take our first target off at 7 and our second off at 15. Those are readily achievable targets in their pre-format. Our exit is always the first reversal candle. If you go in and you never hit your first target, and as soon as it hits a reversal, that's your stop. The E-mini, our targets are 7 ticks and 3 points. The NASDAQ, we're looking for a little over 6 points, all based on the average true range of the instrument and all pre-format. So, I very, very often get a full target winner. The key is to avoid the losers. And today, I couldn't do it. I took a couple of risky trades that blew up in my face that, you know, made me really unhappy. But that's what I do for the live trading room. For my options, I use the same system, but I use between a 30 and a 60 Unirenko. And that will give me a nice window into what's going to happen a month to 6 weeks out.
You know, if you're looking at oil today, it opened up around 52.69. Kind of when it got above 52.75, it looked like it was gaining some steam. And it gave you a nice run up, at least on the short run, about a dollar higher to 53.75 before it had a significant dip. And now, of course, it's rolled over a bit from the 54 area. But that market for a day trade wasn't too bad today, was it?
No. I trade crude oil and I trade the NASDAQ. And today, okay. I took a really lousy trade on crude and a loser, and I took a really nice winner. Mm-hmm. And I had nothing. I look at gold off the off that third eye that grew out of the side of my head.
Right.
And I look at the E-mini, but really, all the other trades I took were on the NASDAQ. Mm-hmm. I mean, that thing is just a rocket ship, and it can be an ATM machine. But if you're not careful, it can basically smack your behind so hard. So those are the two instruments we trade, and they both move. You know, you catch an institutional move right before it starts on crude, bam, 30 ticks.
Even the NASDAQ today, it started to go into the fade mode, and then in the last hour, it's just jammed up to new highs?
Yeah. I mean, the last trade that I took was a 15-point trade on the NQ. And then I just decided to call it a day. Mm. And but remember, I'm out at 25 ticks. So I just went right back in and got another 25 ticks. So the whole move itself consisted of two entries. I got a nice pullback re-entry. So I wound up getting 50 ticks on the trade, which is not all of the 15 points, but close to it. So that was, I mean, with those winners, I still sucked in enough losers to bring me to break even.
Now,
so,
the thing that led you to this type of trading is your mathematical background?
Yeah. I mean, listen, what I do works on any time frame. I mean, here's the thing. Here's what I believe. If every market is a closed system and it's governed by the same forces, if what you use to trade is not instrument dependent and time frame dependent, then it's just not, it doesn't work. I mean, if you're told that it has to be traded on a 450 tick and it has to be traded on a certain instrument, it's bogus. True forces that move financial instruments are going to be relevant on any financial instrument and on any time frame. And remember, Jim, the bottom line is what moves every financial instrument is money. And so what we're looking at are all proxies of big money. And if I could just say one thing for another 15 seconds. 20, 30 years ago, like the guy who invented stochastic, his name was George Lane, and all he did was trade divergence signals. And I think that he probably made a lot of money because the market was governed by small commercial traders. Japanese candlestick patterns were created 400 years ago because the presumption was that the power of each seller was equal to the power of each buyer. So they were very relevant. In today's market, most stocks, forex markets, and futures markets are governed by institutional money, and they ruin that analysis. So really, that's what we're looking for. We're looking for proxies of big money.
Sure, and try to follow the money flow.
Exactly.
All right, Neil, again, same question. What types of trading do you focus on? And then, of course, how did you reach the conclusion that this is the way you want it to go?
Well, I guess let me know if this answers the question properly, is that what I'll do is I don't like to focus on just one thing. Mm-hmm. So for example, some people will say, I only trade the euro, you know, but you could have a huge move in the pound or another currency, you know. So what I'll do is I'll look at all the major things. So, I mean, I'll trade the S&P 500 with leveraged ETFs because I don't have a futures service. I'll do bonds. I'll do the dollar index, which I love to trade because there's hardly any time premium on that. I'll look at all the different sectors. Some sectors are boring, household goods or something like that. But, I mean, I'll always look at the technology sector, the semiconductor sector, the oil sector, the gold sector. So I'll trade gold, the metal. I'll trade gold, the stocks. So you only really need to have about 10, 15 or so sectors in the overall market. And I look at it every single day. And after a while, you're going to start to see how these things correlate and don't correlate, you know? So some people think, oh, the market goes down, gold goes up. That's not true, because when the market crashed in 2008 and 2009, gold also crashed because, you know, people get nervous and they'll just start selling everything. So does this answer your question so far?
Yeah, no, I mean, far as your approach is concerned, I'm understanding you put your periscope up and are not prejudiced against any market. You will look at all the markets and find out where you think the circumstances are most favorable.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it doesn't matter what you buy. It only matters if your account goes up. That's right. Just obvious. You know, some people say, oh man, I wish I had bought Apple in 2008 and 2009. I'd be so rich today. And I say, ha, Apple, you should have bought Tier 1 imports. That was at about, I think, 15 cents. It went to $40. You know what
right.
I mean?
So, right.
I mean, you think, you know, you're at some cocktail party like, oh, I bought Apple. Ho, ho, ho. Look at my Maserati. And then there's that guy in the corner. He's not saying anything. And he's like, yeah, I bought Pure One Imports.
Right. And you took 15 cents worth of risk at the time. Yeah.
You know, 15 cents to $40. I mean, how much is that?
Right.
300, 400.
Well, that's the power of being open to all the different markets and trying to find out where the circumstances are most favorable. How did you come to the point of using like the technical indicators that you use?
I use point and figure almost exclusively for about 10 years. And that's all you really need if you're just doing swing trading, you know, but it was a little bit difficult to find the exact tops and exact bottoms. So it was kind of hard for me. And then I came across the cloud, and that made it easier for the tops bottoms. And it also made it a lot easier to send out alerts to my clients, because it takes quite a long time to learn pointed vigor. I mean, really in a weekend, you can become quite an expert at it if all you do is read a couple books the entire weekend. But it literally takes over a year to really, really get it
if
down.
If people come to you, can you give them some kind of a starting point on understanding it?
Yeah, I mean, I give away a few hours of videos on pointed vigor, which does the basics and how to time the sectors. And it's incredible because you can have bullish percents on the sectors themselves. So twice in the last 8 years or something like that, we made 40% on Nugget, that triple leverage gold miner ETF.
Yeah, and the gold one, right?
And the way I did it was the bullish percent. So what percent of stocks in that sector are on buy signals? It was at zero. Every single stock was at a double bottom, triple bottom, or whatever sell signal. And when that happens, the strongest ones fall off last. And then when it starts to rebound, you're going to get a move. You just have to. Every single stock was bad. And so we made an easy.
So you got the idea it was a sold out market. It's what you're saying.
Yeah. It'll get, it's exactly like football. It will tell you, you know, okay, you're on your own 10 yard line and it's first down. Are you really going to do a running play? I mean, no, yeah. I'm not a football expert. You know, I'm not a football coach.
But what you're just saying is probabilities at that point are, is that anybody who wanted to sell it has sold it. And all the news that probably is bad is in the stock.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're at 10 yard line, you're going to go for a pass. And then if something happens, you know, you're on your last fourth down and you're still stuck there, well, then you're going to kick it, aren't you? So the bullish percent is like that. It's just awesome. You know, and then there's other situations where you're in the middle of the field. You're at 50% and it's third down and you're thinking, oh man, what am I going to do now? I don't know. Because if I get an interception, it's going to go the wrong way and the other team's going to score. We're gonna, you know? So I just love it. It's really great to look at.
Okay, well, I wanted to get an idea on that, and I think...
Well, by the way, sorry, Jim, you can go to stockcharts.com and just type in the word bullish, and it will bring you all the bullish percents for all the sectors. Not all of them. The system I use is a professional system, has a bit more, but StockCharts will give you most of what you need, and then you just check out the field position of where you are in the trade. So type in the word bullish, and you'll have a lot of fun with that.
I tell you, it sounds to me like everyone who's listening should at least contact you to get some of these places where you go to get information as well, because some of these things that you're talking about, I have not heard of, and I've been in this thing for a long time. So this sounds like some good research they could get right off the bat, you know? Okay. With regards to, you know, what markets that you guys are seeing, you know, that might, you know, have some big potential to them, whether it be the stock market, the bond market, or any of the commodity markets, currency markets. Mark, do you have anything that you want to add as far as, you know, some things you see on the horizon in the next week, month, 6 months that you think people should keep an eye on?
Sure. The first thing is I just want to mention an area that I've seen recently come under a lot of scrutiny by a lot of people, but I've been doing for quite some time, and that is the micro cap and small cap biotech companies that are coming up for that have an FDA announcement date for the approval of their, like, in many cases, their first medication. I work with four professors at the University of Miami, hematology, oncology, immunology, neurology, and gastroenterology. We have a huge winner today on Fenix. It was up 10%.
What's the symbol on Fenix?
P is in Paul, F is in Frank, N is in Nancy, X is an X-ray. And you know, we called this approval about a month ago, and they have a drug for osteoporosis, and it got approved. I bought a $7.50 November call, and the stock is now at $8. Mm-hmm. And I'm up about 60% on the call, and I'm going to sell it today. And what's really great is open interest on that strike is like 3,000, and open interest on that strike in November is 3, December is 2. So there are a lot of people who also believe that was going to be a winner. And I just had a couple of others, which I'll throw out. I mean, this is part of what I actually put it in a newsletter. It's called Fomix, F as in Frank, O as in Oscar, M as in Mary, X as in X-ray. I love this small biotech. It's the first company, it hasn't hit its FDA approval date yet. It's the first topical minocycline, you know, which is like tetracycline medicine for the treatment of acne. Mm-hmm. Its phase two trials were outstandingly positive. So it's coming up for a phase three approval, which means if it gets approved, it's going to be marketed and on the shelf. I mean, I think that's going to take that $2.56 stock, take it up, you know, $2 maybe.
Yeah. Well, like I say, this type of arena in the biotech can be very, very rewarding. And of course, if the news goes the other way, it can be very, very damaging. But the one you did mention in the beginning, PFNX, has over 4 million shares today, and it averages about 191,000. Well, so there certainly has been tremendous activity in that stock today. There's no doubt about that.
Well, you know, it's got to, hey, listen, these are risky positions. And because I want to just go on to a couple others, that because the biggest risk I found is that the FDA, like every other bureaucracy, you know, takes like a 6-hour lunch break. So what they do routinely is they postpone these dates. So, you know, October 20th, they're going to come out with the announcement.
Right.
And when do they come out with it? You know, oh, we're going to delay it and we'll come out with it sometime in 2035. So that will tank the stock.
Yeah. So all right, let's do this real quick, because you've got a lot of information on this stuff. And the best thing for people to do is to contact you after the broadcast. So let's real quick get over to Neil. And Neil, is it possible you could give us a little bit of insight on some of the things you're looking at that you find interesting and you would encourage people to look at?
The dollar index. You got to look at it every day. We're long the dollar right now. It's kind of a contrarian play that we have. And look at gold as well. Those are some things that I'm interested in.
So you're still thinking that this 99 area, you know, is still a decent value on the dollar, and the surprise could be that it could go up towards, 102, 105 versus what many people think is it's at the top of the trading range and it might come back down?
The only thing that matters is the demand, really. I mean, I'm looking at all the European currencies every day.
Right.
And
they're fading them pretty good.
To be honest, it's a little bit late in the trade, but it is breaking out today. And we are long the dollar. And I actually think that gold is quite weak and it could break the cloud in the next couple of days.
Right. So, when it went all the way from 1350 to about 1580. So obviously pulling back and digesting that is certainly not off the table. Any levels underneath that you'd find interesting on the gold?
If it breaks the cloud, it'll go down to 1350, I think.
Oh, you think it'll eclipse the entire move, huh?
I mean, that's...
You don't like to look at it. If it eclipses the cloud, you don't like to look at it if it starts eclipsing the cloud, because there's so many people in there and they may all want to come out at the same time.
1400 to start and then 1350 for another target if it breaks down again. But I mean, it all sort of depends on the market here. And it's just when the market, here's the thing that you have to know about the market, and this happens literally every single time. It only works if there's a big sell-off in the market. If there's a big sell-off in the market, the US dollar is going to go up.
Right.
It happens. I mean, a part of that move is just simply demand for the dollar. And another part of the move is you're exchanging stocks for dollars, aren't you?
Right.
So that's going to create a lot of demand for the dollar. So, and when stocks sell off dramatically, bonds will rise, even if they're ridiculously overvalued. Mm. And then when that sell-off is over, you're going to get a peak in bonds and you can short them like crazy too. So what I'm looking at now is I'm definitely looking at the dollar. I always look at it when it's about to peak, sell off.
Right.
It's really important.
Hey, Neil, can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
What do you think of Morgan Stanley as a stock?
Oh, okay.
I know that the direction of commission charging is going down, so that can't be too helpful, right?
Yeah, I mean, all the big firms are cutting commission to zero, but I'm wondering what they're going to do to the bid and ask if that spread will go up.
Widen it out.
Huh?
Probably widen it out. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I know that Robinhood only makes money off margin loans, so they say.
What does Morgan look like with the cloud and everything, though?
It's in a negative trend below the cloud, but you got to be careful of these fake sell signals, you know? So if there's like a big triple quintuple bottom and it breaches it by a little bit in rallies, then you can have it like a bottom type fishing play, you know? So you might be able to do some bottom fishing on that for a little bit.
Options traders are really, really pounding the table on Morgan's Stanley. Yeah. I'll tell you that. And that's,
you mean they're pounding the table to get in because it looks like that low that we saw at 39 looks like about the end of it?
Yep.
And, that's what the chart looks like. And the P.E. ratio is only 8, so you're not exactly paying up too much. If these guys can earn money, it's certainly not expensive, right?
Right, right. And that's why I was curious. That's all.
All right, let's go into the wrap-up phase. We're going to start out with Mark, who's going to reintroduce himself and tell people how they can get all this information on all the stuff that he's doing. So, Mark, you're up.
Well, this is Mark Sachs from Right Line Trading. I think you know my trading methodology, my strong reliance on multi-time frame analysis. You can reach me at www.rightlinetrading.com. We have a trial in our trading room for $2. You can get a trial of my options alert newsletter. You can get a trial just about anything. On there is our phone number. I'm always readily available. We've got a lot of people here in the office. I make them live here. They're all chained to their desks. So you can reach any of us at any time that you like.
Great. Thanks a lot for being with us. Neil, again, a little bit of background on yourself. And again, how do you get a hold of you to get the information and all that technical stuff we were talking about that people could probably use a hand on?
Sure. You can go to traderreview.com and sign up there. I give away a report, which is the best ETF that you can hold for the next 10 years. If you're a super long term, it's the best fundamental ETF that I know of. And then you'll get commentary every couple of days, just what I think about the market. Even last week, I even gave away the TLT call to everyone. And then it became in 2 days, 60%. But I don't do that very often, once or twice a year, when I really like something. So you get a lot of good commentary. And then if you want, you can sign up my service. It's only $29 for your first month.
Great. Well, both these guys certainly have a lot of experience in the market and a lot of knowledge in the market. So I do encourage people to investigate what they can do for you by contacting them. There's no doubt about it. If you would like to understand a little bit more about what I'm looking at and the approaches that I'm looking at, just go to optionprofessor@gmail.com and you could shoot me an email with any questions you have, and I'll be more than happy to get back to you on that. Again, great to have you guys with us. I think we covered a lot and added a lot of value to people's day here. So I'm going to turn it back over to David right now.
All right. Thanks, guys. Great show. So just a quick reminder to everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory. And you can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past shows or reports there. Be sure to join us tomorrow for the 97th episode of Analyze Your Trade. Jim will be back to moderate and Michael Filigera will be back for that one. So you can always watch the live broadcast at timingresearch.com/live. And I just want to thank my guests again for today. Mark Sachs of rightlinetrading.com, Neil Batho of traderreview.net, and Jim Kenny of optionprofessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Hey, thanks, David.
Hey, thank you, David. Thank you, Jim.